So there was a little girl in kindergarten. It was her birthday, and her mum decided to decorate the room, and she put like balloons and streamers all around the room, and food and drink as well. But there was one little kid there who was kind of jealous of what was going on. He didn't like it because the things weren't his. And he started causing trouble. So much so that he almost ruined the party. And one of the mothers saw this and she walked over and she knelt beside him and said, she looked him straight in the eye and she said, "Johnny, it's not your party." Now this story could be about me because my name's John. But it could be about any of us, really, because it's hard for us to see beyond our own noses. It's hard to get past our own interests. We can be so blinkered. So Psalm 2 wants to correct us. It says to us, you need a big view of things, a reality check. Last week we got this from Psalm 1, and Psalm 1 said, there's only two paths, and you need to know which direction you're heading. Psalm 2 says, you need to know where history is heading. It gives us the whole show. It puts us in our place and God in His. So let's take a look at it. Let's look out, first of all. So, verses 1 to 3. So if you've looked out into the world this week, you're probably asking, what's wrong with the world? Is it education, government, big businesses? Is it inequality? I notice what it says. It starts with a question. Why do the nations rebel and the people plot a vain thing? The kings of the earth take their stand, and the rulers conspire together against the Lord and against His anointed one. Now things haven't changed too much, have they? Nations are raging, people are plotting, kings and rulers are conspiring. The world has gone mad. But notice there's method to this madness. There's conspiring. The world powers have united. But what for? Have they come together for world peace? To fight the axis of evil? To usher the age of equality? Do you notice what it says there in verse 2? They've come together against the Lord and against His King. The world hates God. It's in a satanic panic. And all the world's hostility is going one way, against the Lord and against His anointed, the Christ. The world's in a rebellion, a state of rebellion. So how did this happen? What started this war? Well, notice in verse 3, the world sees God's reign as restraint. It says, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. We like to think we're in control of our lives, don't we? As the poem goes, I'm the master of my own fate. I'm the captain of my own soul. Isn't that the great cry of the human heart? I did it my way, to quote Frank Sinatra. You've all probably heard that song before. It still gets plenty of airplay. I think Trump took his first dance to that at the inauguration ball. But mostly it gets played at funerals. And it goes, and now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I've travelled each and every highway, and more, much more than this, I did it my way. And off goes the coffin behind the final curtain. If they could, they'd still be shaking their fist at God. Isn't that ironic? If anything should sober us up, it should be our own death. But it doesn't. People are still trying to burst the bonds, even in the coffin. But why? Why do people shake their fists at God? He's our creator. Isn't He He's the one who made us. He wants to be our friend, not our enemy. He cares for us. And the Bible tells us that God is love. And all of God's restraints are out of love. All the laws He gives us are because He loves us. The other week I was in the city and there was about 20 preschool kids walking down Ann Street and they were all tied together with a rope, and they were all holding onto a rope, walking in a line, like ducks. And it was really cute, but it was for a reason. It was to stop them from running out on the road and getting hit by a car. So, and in the same way, God gives us cords of love to stop us from ruin. And like the child, the little child who's learning how to walk, it needs restraint. In Hosea, there's a picture of this in Hosea chapter 11. And it's like the Lord's pulling out his photo album, and he gets Israel up on his lap and he's saying, "Look, Israel, when you were a child, I drew you with cords and bands of love. But you didn't want them. You said, 'Get rid of these bonds, cast off these chains. Let us be our own gods. Let us be free from restraint.'" And last week, in Psalm 1, we saw that sin was an addiction. And now here we see it's reared its ugly head again and showed us more of itself. It's also anarchy. Sin is living independent of God, the one who made us. It's power grasping, usurping his throne. It's throwing off his restraints. It's mutiny. You know, what went wrong? G.K. Chesterton was asked by the Times newspaper to write a response to this very question: what's wrong with the world? And it was the shortest letter ever written in the Times newspaper. What went wrong with the world? What's wrong with the world? He wrote, "Dear sir, I am. Yours sincerely, G.K. Chesterton." What's wrong with the world? I am. Me. See, self-love puts me on the throne rather than God. It wants me to be king rather than Jesus. See, these two kingdoms are radically opposed to each other. You know, Augustine summed it up like this. He said they couldn't be more different. The two kingdoms were created by two kinds of love. The kingdom of the world was created by self-love and leads to contempt of God. Whereas the kingdom of the Son is founded upon love of God and leads to contempt of self. See, the kingdom of this world is founded on pride. That's why we hate God. We want his place. See, the whole of human history can be summed up like this: God showing his love for us, and us showing our contempt for God. And all this comes to a head when Jesus comes into the world. You see it in the Gospels. You see that Herod and the Pharisees and the Sadducees, they all banded together to come against Jesus. They conspired how to kill him. And you see it in Acts, the Acts of the Apostles. In Acts 4, the Jewish rulers, they want to kill the apostles for preaching Christ. And so the apostles, they gave themselves to prayer. And this was the earliest prayer meeting recorded in the church. And what did they pray? Psalm 2. They matched up their situation with Psalm 2. They used Psalm 2 as a lens to see what was going on in the world. And they realized that this hostile world, this world that hates God, is also a persecuting world. The hate that is aimed at Jesus is also aimed at his people. You know, and we can do the same thing. We can look out into our world and use Psalm 2 as the lens to understand what's going on. Did you know that Christians are the most persecuted people on the face of the earth? I heard this stat yesterday that 200 million Christians were persecuted or killed last year for their faith. 200 million. That's phenomenal. And that, we didn't hear about that in the media. The world hates us because it hates Jesus. So when we look out into the world, We need to use Psalm 2 to do it. And then we need to look up. But when we look up, what do we see? That's the next point, looking up. Notice in verse 4, it's a sudden change of scene. We're shot up into heaven. And what's God think about all this? What's God think about everything that's going on in the world? You see there, he's laughing. Why is God laughing? Because it's laughable. The creature against the creator. The finite against the infinite. Now, have you seen the comparison of the universe and Earth? You can look it up on Google or something, and this is just one sort of those facts that you can find. You know, to fly around the Earth takes about 47 hours in a jet plane, or in a normal plane, sorry, that's going like 500 miles an hour. To fly around the biggest star in our known universe would take 1,100 years, going twice as fast. That's the biggest known star in our, and that's only one other star in the whole universe. That's just one planet in our Milky Way. See, apparently they've discovered thousands of more of these Milky Ways. See, man against God, the creator of this finite, this infinite, it seems like an infinitely vast universe. This creator, man against God, it's laughable. It's like the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11. Do you remember that story where the people banded together to build a tower as high as heaven? And they say, let's make a name for ourselves. Come, let us come together and let us make a name for ourselves. They wanted the glory to go to man and not God. And what's God's response to this? What does it say? He couldn't see this puny tower from heaven. So he says, let us go down there and look at it. He couldn't see it. It was too small. And he came down and scattered them in a moment. All their work was undone in a moment. You know, I remember when I was little, I was about 10, I think, and I got up to go to school and I flicked on the TV and I saw the Twin Towers, these giant towers, you know, vast in the sky in New York City. The Twin Towers, they were the most powerful sign of the West's economic power. And what happened? They collapsed like a stack of cards. And it's been the same all through history, hasn't it? Babylon? What about the great city of Babylon? Nebuchadnezzar's Babylon. It's ruins now. Rome, the greatest civilization. Rome was sacked in a day. The Third Reich, Hitler thought it would survive 3,000 years. It collapsed in under 30. See, they all came crashing down suddenly, finished. History. The saying is true. The paths of glory but lead to the grave. The paths of glory lead but to the grave. And so it is with all our mighty achievements. They can come crashing down in a moment. You know, Jesus himself warned us of this when he told the parable about the rich man in Luke chapter 12. He had a big crop, this rich man, and he built a big barn to put his grain in. And after he'd done that, he said, he put his feet up and he said, I've got plenty, I'll take it easy now. I'll eat, drink and be merry. So he thought he'd made it. He thought that was it. But God came and said to him, you fool! This night your soul's required of you. And the things you have, now whose will they be? Is this how you're living? Are you building your own little kingdom apart from God? You know, our lives are so short and fragile. It can all come crashing down in a moment. like Isaiah said, all flesh is like grass, and all its goodness like the flower of the field. The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of the Lord endures forever. And look at verse 6. The Lord has spoken, the word of the Lord. I've set my king on my holy hill of Zion. And do you realize who that is? You probably know this, but the word anointed one means Christ. When the people elect a king or a ruler, we get a leader like Trump. But Jesus, he didn't hold a campaign. The votes weren't counted. We didn't choose him. God chose him. Look, he's sanctioned by God. He says, you are my son. Today I have become your father. See, he's the rightful king. And this today, it's the eternal today. It stands forever. And look, he rules all the earth. Look, it says nations and ends of the earth. You know, all the great leaders combined, they struggle to run a single country. You know, and some of us struggle to run our own lives and manage our own diaries. But Jesus rules the world. It all belongs to Jesus. And he's really powerful. You know, if you pick up a Bible storybook and you have a flick through, they've got pictures of Jesus and he's usually got a white face and nice soft hair. But look at him here. He's the one who wields the iron rod. The one that breaks the nations and smashes them to pieces like a potter smashes a clay pot. He's dangerous. He's untamable. C.S. Lewis, he had it right when he portrayed him as a lion in Aslan. In Narnia, when one of the children asks Mr. Beaver, "Is Aslan safe?" The beaver replies, "Who said anything about safe? Of course he's not safe. But he's good. He's the king." Friends, how do we know he's good? How can we be sure that this king is good? Because the one on the throne was the one on the cross. The one on the throne was the one on the cross. He could have stayed. He could have stayed on his throne, but he stepped off. He stepped off into the world that hated him. He came to make his enemies his friends. He didn't do it by lopping off their heads, did he? He did it by hanging on a cross. The one on the throne was the one on the cross. He stooped down low. You know, he was equal with God, but he didn't count it as a thing to be grasped. He didn't try to hold on to it. He went down, 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 and he became a man. He humbled himself to the point of death, even death on a cross. And it says, "Therefore, God has highly exalted him and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of God the Father." So what should we do? Well, friends, we don't have to wonder. The psalm tells us. Kiss the Son in verse 12. That's the response. Kiss the Son. And it's not a sentimental kiss. It's the kiss of loyalty. It's like the subject would enter into the king's court and come and bow before the king and kiss his hand in loyalty. Embrace the king. See, Jesus is your king. So kiss the Son. Bow the knee before him. You know, not out of terror. Not because you have to. But because he died for you. See, he could have smashed you to pieces. But instead, he was broken for you on that cross. And see how the psalm ends. Blessed are all those who take refuge in Him. There is a refuge. What's a refuge? Well, it takes the hit for you. Think of the umbrella. When you walk outside, the umbrella gets wet, but you don't get wet. The umbrella takes the hit. Or a bomb blast, you go into the bomb shelter, and the bomb takes the hit. You're safe. It's a refuge. See, friends, there's a judgment coming, but there's a refuge in Jesus. He takes the hit for you. Like Paul says to the Thessalonians, he says, "You turn from idols to serve the living and true God, and to wait for His Son from heaven, whom He raised from the dead, even Jesus, who delivers us from the wrath to come." See, there's a judgment coming, but Jesus took the hit for you. Do you know that old African-American spiritual song? It goes, "Oh," I was going to sing it, but I don't know if I'll do that. "Oh, sinner man, where are you going to run to? Oh, sinner man, where are you going to run to? Oh, sinner man, where are you going to run to on that day? Run to the moon, moon, won't you hide me? Run to the sea, sea, won't you hide me?" Do you know that this song's based on Revelation 6? And the day of wrath is coming, and there's an image of it. And the people are calling on the mountains to come and hide them, the mountains and the rocks, to bury them from the wrath of the Lamb, from His face. For the great day of wrath has come. Now, did you see that avalanche in Italy yesterday or the day before? It just half the mountain came down and landed on that luxury hotel. Do you imagine calling on that to come and hide you? That's what's going on here. This is desperate. That's the image. There's nowhere to go. Where are you going to run to? God is everywhere. See, there's no refuge from Him except in Him. There's no refuge from Him except in Him. Want to run from Him? Do you want to run from Him? Run to Him. Do you feel like you need to run? Does your sin convict you? Run to Jesus. He'll hide you. If you've never come to Him, come to Him now. He's always ready to hide a sinner. He bids you to go to Him. He invites you to come to Him now. So let's pray a prayer of commitment together. God, be merciful to me, a sinner, and make me to know and believe in Jesus Christ. Thank you for providing us a refuge where sinners like me can run and find safety. Thank you that because Jesus was broken, we can be made whole. Help us to run to you always. In His name, amen.